Let's do
Blog
it.
Talk Radio.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. African American Empowerment Saturday, 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. It's your main man, Marvin Rome, and coming to you live. We got a good one for you today, brothers and sisters. We got Dr. Lafayette Maxwell, Brother George, Dr. Bruce, and much more. Coming right up in just a moment. You don't want to miss it. It's 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment for the African American community, and the only way that we can get that done is through love. And we are going to have to do the work of working on ourselves. So let's get to it. It's better love, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters. There's no better love. There is no greater love than for self and kind. I'll say it again. And y'all know, nothing new for me. I didn't make it up. There's no greater love. Here at the NAAEA, we use that as a foundation for self-love, right? I didn't make it up. We got to just look back through the pages and the annals of history and time, and you'll find it in many cultures, right? Specifically coming from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Got to give him praise. Props for putting our people together correctly, remembering our people. So we recognize the minister, the original, for doing his work. And now on with the show. There are five pillars to the NAAEA. Now I'll start with the first one. That is being able to create peace in our lives. How do you do that, Marvin? You have to do it several ways, and we're going to do it through politics. One way is a political agenda. We must have a political agenda, brothers and sisters, and that agenda has to allow us to understand how to manufacture life, right, and life more abundantly, if you will, in this culture, right, in this society. You have to understand American politics. I'm going to say that again, right? Maybe it'll go down and go in. You have to understand American politics and the political system and how it works, and then figure out how it works for you and your children and your families and your do. We're going to have to create institutions that define our own reality and use our political power and our political pressure to things in place that's going to work for and benefit us. That's the only way. That's the only way, right? We have to have a political agenda that's going to get resources in our hands, right? We're going to have to do the work of thinking about how we can get those resources into the hands of people that's going to use them for our best interests. That's what we're going to have to do. We're going to have to, now the E, we're going to have an economic agenda that supports the political agenda that keeps resources in our communities, in our hands, floating around where we exchange, right? We have to exchange resources to continue to have the ball rolling in our court. We have to have an economic platform and an economic agenda where we do the work of working on ourselves financially, right? We have to understand how money works in the capitalistic system. Listen to me. If you don't have an economic agenda and a political agenda, then you are pawns in the game. And we must change the trajectory of our participation in this system in order for us to be effective in this system. Hear me out. Then there's the A. It's the individual piece. You have to take care of your A. Your A is your body. Your A is your temple. You're going to have to push away from the table. You're going to have a diet that is central to the way your genetic structure is. You're going to have to put things in place that help you stay healthy. Push back from the processed food. Cut back on sugar and salts and all of that stuff, right? And really get a healthy diet that's going to make sure that you're mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually healthy. You got to do that. You got to get a regimen that really looks at taking care of your body. Do you have a major piece where you're putting in place all of the components that's going to help you stay well? You just walk, right? 15 minutes a day. How about that? Right? 15 minutes and a good diet, a basic workout routine. It has to work for you. Now, see, relevant cultural programs like this one to help us reinforce what it is that we need to know about ourselves that the world is not going to tell you. The world's not going to tell you that you're great. The world is not going to tell you that you're excellent, that you're powerful, that you can do it, right? We have to redefine what that definition of who we are is and then start living and embodying it so the world will see us for who we are and not a carbon copy of a blueprint that someone made that projects the negative aspects of ourselves. I'm going to get amen on that one. And then lastly, E, the comprehensive education that really looks at how we can begin to continue to educate ourselves, our boys, our girls, our women, our children, and our families, and create those institutions that define our own reality. And now it's the Stan Macklin moment. I'll be right back. Man, Stan, the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah, man, we got the deck.
I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in.
We need those institutions that define our own reality. We really do. I don't know what happened to that clip, but you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to keep it moving because we have to understand what those institutions are, and we're going to keep hearing Brother Stan over and over again until we get it. The only way. Let's try it again. Man. Stan, the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
That's how I do it.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah,
we
got the deck.
I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing.
Thank you, Brother Stan. We got it right that time. Brother Stan is not with us, but he's still with us because he's continuing to tell us that the pillars of the NAAEA, what I just went through just now, is going to be the determining factors to how we can move forward in the world, in our communities, and in this country. And we're going to have to be able to do that individually and collectively, right? The work needs to be done, and it has to be done right now. And now for my favorite segment. It's the Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment with Brother George. Oh, yeah. Come on, Brother George. Bring it.
Uh-huh. Hey, mom. Hey, wife. Bring it. What?
We ride here. We're not going anywhere. We ride here. This is all that we don't share.
Yes, sir, brother. Yes, sir. Well,
can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. You know, I always appreciate the invitation to do this, and I love the introduction to it. And today's Kwanzaa principle from the Nguza Sapa is Nia. Nia, which means purpose. To make as our collective vocation the building and developing of our community in order to restore our people to their traditional greatness. I love that ending. I just love it. Now, Nia, once again, with this purpose, the act of being responsible demonstrates that a person is committed to a certain standard of behavior. Through commitment to an idea, to a goal, to a positive, ongoing relationship with someone or something, we find our purpose in life and we begin to fulfill our human potential. Man, that's just lovely. Now, today, we're going to have Dr. Maxwell, and he's going to be talking on Black Liberation Theology. And so what I wanted to do, I was given the principles of economics by the doctor, but today I want to break with that, and I want to give like an introduction to the Black Liberation Theology. And I'm going to read from a book called Introduction to Black Studies by Marlana Karanga. And Marlana Karanga, man, he has done a lot of work, you know, in our community, and I commend that brother. Now I'm reading from page 236 in his book. And this was put together as a college textbook for that course. Black Liberation Theology, the Historical Background. In July 1966, and in the midst of the period of Black urban revolt, a group of Black clergy met in Harlem to develop a position on the struggle for Black power in the United States. There they assumed a position which made a definitive contribution to the emergence of Black liberation theology. Breaking from King's negative position on Black power as a nihilistic, they affirmed the right and need of Black power, criticized the Black church for too often steering its members away from the reign of God in this world to a distorted and complacent view of an otherworldly conception of God's power, and committed themselves to use more of the resources of our churches in working for human justice in places of social change and upheaval, where God is truly already at work. This statement and other highly significant Black Liberation Theology documents appear in Wilmore and Cone's 1979 excellent documentary, History of Black Theology, from 1966 to 1979. Finally, the body of clergy who began in 1966 as the National Committee of Negro Churchmen changed their name to the National Committee of Black Churchmen and became the practical expression and representative of the new Black Liberation Theology. Black Liberation Theology, however, did not come into being by itself. It evolved from several fundamental sources. First, it was developed in response to the dynamics of the decade of the 60s on Blackness and social activism and struggle. The 60s demanded a redefinition of the world in Black images and interests, and Black religion was no exception. Also, the 60s demanded active engagement in the Black struggle for liberation and a higher level of human life, and challenged the church to participate or disband. Secondly, Black Liberation Theology was inspired by both criticism of King, and King's stress on the social relevance and role of religion, and on active engagement in the struggle against social evil were accepted and applied. But his stress on nonviolence was challenged and played down. His denunciation of Black power rejected, and his emphasis on redemptive suffering translated as redemption through liberating struggle. So
they took a position primarily against Dr. King's nonviolent resistance. And, you know, people have a right to, you know, whatever they choose they want to challenge, you know. And I think to some degree that some of that was misunderstood, you know, by what Dr. King was trying to do. Because I really think that he was trying to do something good, and it turned out to backfire on him because he really didn't know the people that he was dealing with. But, brother, that's what I got for you. And if you don't have no questions, then, you know, we can move on because I can't wait for Dr. Maxwell.
Thank you, Brother George. I appreciate that. Great job. Great segment. One question, though. You know how we got to do this, man. I want to ask we'll go back to Nia for a minute, right? What should be the purpose of the African-American right now, at this moment? Nia, purpose. What is our purpose? What should we be focusing on?
Our purpose should be getting back to who we once were. And that's to me. You know, we are the most accomplished people on the planet. And we don't know it. And so in order to get back to where we once was, we need to listen to lectures like we are today. And we need to learn more about our history before we came here as slaves, to have a foundation in really who you are. So that's me, brother.
All right. Thank you, Brother George. We got a good one coming up. I just want to challenge you, wherever you are listening today, figure out what that purpose is, and then coalesce with another brother or sister and begin to do the work at home in the community, picking up trash if you need to. If you see something on the ground, pick it up. Pick it up. Let's pick up behind each other. Let's clean up our act, and let's get to a place where we can be the most excellent people that we can be. Maybe not perfect, but can you strive for excellence in your life, becoming the best person you can be by doing more than you ever had, by challenging yourself to go through these principles and see how I can get my peace act together? Can I push away from the table those things that I need to do for myself and my family to prepare my young people or my nieces and my nephew or my children for the future? That is what we must do. That work must be done, and it must be done today. It is up to us, brothers and sisters, again, to do that work. Identify those areas that we need to focus in on and hone in on and get to work. We're going to have to get to work now. It's time for us to identify what those purposes are and then repurpose and retool and get to work on examining and then actualizing what it is that needs to be done for change. If you're willing to change, you're willing to grow, and you're willing to do the work on yourself, it'll happen. It's happened before, and now it's our turn. But we're going to have to do the work together, individually and then collectively, and you can't go wrong. So let's rebuild ourselves one day at a time by doing the work of working on ourselves. It's Empowerment Saturday, 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment. We got Dr. Lafayette Maxwell in the house today. Slido today is 340-7396. Slido.com. Go on over there. Right, put your thoughts in. Slido.com. 340-7396. Brother George.
Yes, sir.
Ready. Well, live. The environment Saturday. We got a good one today. We're going to ask him to bring it. Bring it hard. Maxwell, welcome to the show. How are you? Technical problems here, Dr. Maxwell.
Yeah,
man. In the meantime, Thank you, sir. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Doing great. Doing great, man.
Right. So, first of all, I want to welcome you, right? And we're talking about developing an Afrocentric theology, right? And with you, of course,
yes.
Dr. Lafayette Maxwell. So can you tell our audience a little bit about yourself, and then let's get into telling and recalling our own story.
I'm Lafayette Maxwell from Jacksonville, Florida, Black Bottom. I'm a professor at Shaw University Divinity School in undergrad. Also helped start Apex School of Theology, which is in existence for 24 years. I guess that's enough.
All right. So if you're listening, you see what you got on your hands right here. We have a scholar, a teacher, an activist, and a minister. Let's get started with telling us about what we need to do to recall and tell our own story. And you said in the production meeting that we have a rich story and a rich history, right? And that we need to unearth that, right? And so can you kind of tell us about that? And what is this Afrocentric theology that we all can grasp a hold to?
We'd love to do that. I think we have told what the dominant culture has done to us. We got a PhD in that. But I think that sometimes we've overlooked our own story. And so my theme is today on telling and recalling our own story. Poland, we have a rich story and history to tell. That's the village. On the flip side of that is the villains who have tried to oppress us, but we have a history that's shown us that they have not been totally successful.
Mm-hmm.
And let me say this first of all. The most potent weapon that the oppressor has is the mind of those who are oppressed. Stephen Biko said that. Secondly, when justice is denied, and where poverty is enforced, and where ignorance prevails on any one class and makes them feel in society that they do not count, they rob that group of people of their dignity and their personhood and their property. And Frederick Douglass helps me out. If there is no struggle, there is no progress. Those who profess to favor freedom and yet deprecate agitation are men and women who want crops without plowing the field. They want the rain without the thunder and the lightning. Power concedes nothing without a demand. It never has and never will. The oppressor, the villain, has given us their story on slavery and enslaved people. The prison system, Jim Crow, lynching, interstate highway system that destroyed our community, especially in Baltimore, Maryland. They've done this all over the country. In 1948, the government decided that they wanted to have an interstate system. But then in 1956, when Eisenhower was president, I used to wonder why 95 was the Eisenhower highway. But was it his administration where they decided that they was going through every black community or poor community that they could and destroy those communities. And when I done my study in Baltimore, Maryland, it was a rich culture where blacks would come and do all kinds of things in what I'm going to talk about, Black Bottom. And now Baltimore has now acknowledged what they've done. But they cannot take back what they've done. They went to the heart of the black community with all of that infrastructure they had and put a highway through it. And it's called a highway to nowhere. Their aim was to simply destroy that black community. They used it as a tool to decide what they was going to do to urban renewal and what James Baldwin called it, urban displacement. They used Baltimore, Maryland to get that started. And my brothers and sisters, they do that. And then the other thing was redlining. They decided that the government, when you ask about the ghetto, the government created the ghetto.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. government, that's right, by underfunding the schools in our community. That was destroying this community. Depressing information and infrastructure. And it was called redlining because the banks had a map all over the country. And where African Americans lived, it was in red. And then where the other folks lived, they were in green. And then they developed what they call now, we used to be the country, but they talk about the outskirts of town where the rich lived. So you couldn't get no loans. That was another avenue of trying to destroy black folks. But in the midst of all of this, we were very resilient. And what I'm suggesting is we don't need to lose our story talking about their story. We know what they've done. But do we really know what our people done even in the midst of what we were going through? Our history has been lost or stolen or strayed. I was really reading just this week where a black songwriter of the gospel, he was really the father of gospel. He was the first one in Chicago to know how to put those lyrics that was in the church on paper and send it all around the country. And when he died, his family did not know what they had. And if recently they looked at that information and now it's in Princeton University, it always goes to them. Now, they'll do something, but they're going to do it, and their scholars will have that. And so sometimes we lose what we have. The second problem is the oppressor has stolen stuff from us and given it to themselves. And lastly, we have strayed. And I wanted to tell my story to University of Florida. I went to Duke University. But before I went to those schools, I got my burning and my learning from the community that I lived in. And so they could not change me in the University of Florida, nor at Duke Divinity School, because I had a foundation and started with my father, my daddy, who took me around Jacksonville, Florida, and showed me buildings and things that black people had accomplished in that particular city. And he would walk me in the park and sing a song to me called "You'll Never Walk Alone." When you walk through a storm, hold your head up high. And don't be afraid of the storm, for at the end of the storm is a golden sky, the sweet silver songs of the Lord. Walk on, Lafayette. I'm named after him. Walk on with hope in your heart, and you will never, ever walk alone. So I made my way to the University of Florida. And when I done that, I had my history with me. And I say, University of Florida, you got something on your hand now. And so there I was over the Black Student Union situation. And we went out in the community and fed the hungry and clothed the naked as students at the University of Florida. We had a come together day where the Kappas and the Alphas, I never was in a fraternity, got nothing against them, but I found I was a none for none. And because I was not in a fraternity and a sorority, I was able to bring the fraternities and sororities together with a program called Wake Up Everybody. And I believe that was in 1975 because I had the album Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes. And on that album, at the top of it, it was in a rock. But they had a brain with a hole in it, with a flower coming out in it. And we were able to get there and bring all kind of music, jazz, gospel, and et cetera, and turn that school on fire. And it was because I knew my history, I was able to bring it to them. Same thing at Duke. But when I got there at Duke, somewhere between 77 and 80, with a full scholarship, never had to pay a dime. And when I got there, they say, you were number 8 on the Rutgers scale. I didn't know what they were talking about. That was an earthquake scale. They knew what I was doing at the University of Florida. And I didn't have to worry about changing who I was. When I got to be the leader of the student body, the first thing I had it was Warlord to paint me some black pictures of black African art. And so when somebody would come in that office, they knew that I knew my history. But one day, Marsha Shepherd in Durham came for our citywide revival. It was Emancipation Proclamation. And now we know that we was not emancipated on January the 1st, and I knew that too. But Marsha Shepherd, a preacher, he came into the citywide revival, which was interdenominational and was well attended. And his subject was, don't lose your story. And I thought about it, thinking about what Marcus Garvey and all the others had done and what all the presidents. And when he finished, it just touched me to go back while I was at Duke and revisit my story. And in doing that, I was from a place that they call Black Bottom. Black Bottom is one step lower than the bottom. Sometimes where we were, it was called Black Wall Street. And there are many cities around the country, I found out, that had a black bottom. That means you was lower. And then whites were considered to be uptown or downtown and made them better than us. In Durham, it was called Haytie. And Brother Bridges is going to come and share with that. And I want Brother Marvin and Brother Joyce to talk about that area in Haytown in Richmond, Virginia, to let us know that we have a rich story to tell. In Orlando, Richmond, in Black Beverly Hills, Tulsa, Oklahoma, where we had all kind of things. They isolated us, and they didn't worry about us. But when you get wealth, it's because the money that you get turns over at least 20 times in your community. They didn't know what was happening. In those so-called black bottoms in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and Springfield, Illinois, it was a place where churches were there. We had airports. We had businesses. We had burial societies. We had old folks' homes. We had children homes and home for the homeless. In my home church, the Bethel Baptist Institutional Church, I didn't know what institutional meant until I got around Dr. C. Eric Lincoln at Duke University, a black scholar. And when I told him about it, he said, I don't know nothing about Jacksonville. I know about the institutional church in Atlanta and Chicago. And he said to me in his sociological class, he said, now you go home and get me some information because I got to go to a scholarly conference. And when I do, I want to use what you have. And this is sort of humorous. He said, now, if you get the information and it's good, you're going to get an A, but you're not going to get any money for my book. And if you give me something going to make me look bad, you're going to flunk the class. But in doing that, I went back in my own Bethel Baptist Institutional Church, and they had an attic. And I went up there looking, and they had all kind of disjointed stuff, and I got this book. It had the history of the Bethel Baptist Institutional Church from 1839 until 1977. And in that book, I looked at the motto was save the whole person, body, mind, and soul. I found out that an institutional church was a church that didn't just come together on Sunday and hear a sermon and have Sunday school, but it was rich during the week. They had a chauffeur training. They had their own publishing company. They had their own school in the church called the Florida Baptist Academy. And if you all know anything about Howard Thurman, being born in Daytona Beach, Florida, he could only go to 12th grade, but he could not go to college because blacks could not go to college. And he tells his story, and you can see it on YouTube. And he said he went to the bus station to go to Jacksonville, Florida. And guess where he was going? To the Bethel Baptist Institutional Church in Jacksonville, Florida. And when he got to the bus station, he did not have enough money to go. And they said a man gave him that additional money. In my mind, I said, I hope that was a black man. But Thurman said it himself, that it was a black man who gave him that money to get. When he went there, he did not lack religion because he could not understand, Thurman, how could black people follow a God when white people are treating us all kinds of ways? But grandma, having that grandma, I would say, son, you don't understand now, but you're going to understand later. Mm-hmm. So Thurman, as a young man at 21, on his way to Jacksonville, Florida, to go to a school that was in the basement of our church. And he was going to write a book on the disinherited, that black folks are disinherited. But when he left Jacksonville, Florida, he found out about the Jesus of history, not the one that the white man gives us, not the one that was on the cards in Sunday school, not the pictures that we had in our house, but that he was the God of the oppressed. And after he left that and he went on to ITC and Howard and other people, he wrote that book, Jesus and the Disinherited. And Dr. Martin Luther King had two books when he was going through the Civil Rights Movement. One of them was the Bible, and the other one was Thurman's book, Jesus and the Disinherited. I suggest, I'll be talking about that when I come on in later shows. But I want you to get that book, and don't go anyplace until you read the first part. It says Jesus and interpretation. Not from the oppressor's point of view, but from our point of view. We have a story to tell. We had businesses in those communities. We had a tennis court where Althea Gibson honed her talents. An employment agency on that book. And my brothers and sisters, let me say the difference between the villain who are eaters. My cousin used to say that the villains are eaters and we are the ETs. But the eaters, the villain, what happens is what they meant for bad, slavery, enslavement, the prison system, Jim Crow and Jane Crow and lynching and those intersectionals I talked about in the community. But we took stuff they put in our way in those communities to help us on our way. It was in that community that I remember that the preacher said, don't lose your story. You have a story to tell. He used a story in the Bible of Joshua going over the Jordan. And he talked about that the water would recede, and the people would walk through there. And Joshua told them, look, I want you to have 12 stones in this river. And so they put 12 stones that they were going over on their way to Jerusalem. And when they got out of the water on the land, he said, I want you to have 12 stones on the land. And somebody asked Joshua, why are you doing that? He said, because there's going to come a time when the tide comes in the Jordan River, and they'll see 12 stones, and your children will say, what meaneth those stones? And when the water descends back over the Jordan, there's going to be 12 stones representing the 12 tribes of Israel, and your children and their children's children would ask you, what meaneth these stones? And they tell that story, and I'll do that when I come back and talk about the Bible from an African perspective. We were there. Not talking about the white pictures in the Bibles and stuff like that. We've got to know our real story. The Bible, I remember when I went to a church, this man was 90-something years of age, and I was going for Black History, and he walked up to me. He said, son, do you not know that the Bible is a book of Black history? I never forgot it. And I want to bring that to you in terms of my research, all right? Now, they put stumbling blocks in our way, they thought, by talking about black bottom and they on the top. But we took them stumbling blocks that they put in black bottom and turned them into stepping stones. They thought of us being at the bottom and a ghetto and things of that nature. But we turned black bottom all over the country, and I've got the places where we turned into a paradise. And when they tried to separate us, we came together. And in many major cities in the summertime, you'll see that black radio, and you'll see that the NAACP and all these other groups, we had come together day in my community. And everywhere I have gone, to the universities I've gone, and to the church where I pastor, I always have come together day. Where did I get that from? In Jacksonville, Florida. Because I saw how people came together. When you go in a community and you oppress, we should not oppress one another. We got to take one side. I've learned about Malcolm X. I learned about Dr. Martin Luther King. Nobody pit them against one another, Stokely Carmichael, Elijah Muhammad. I remember in our community, you had elders in the community, while the parents would go out, I'm talking about Black Bottom, where the elders would go out to work, our mothers and our fathers. But there was always somebody, an elder at home, sitting on the porch, watching what was going on in the community. And my brothers and sisters, at that time, because we had community, she could whoop you herself and nobody would say anything, and you get another whooping from your parents. We don't have that kind of situation now. But in that time when we didn't have so much, we had more than what we thought we were. When they said, servants, obey your master, we've done a whole lot of things. Like Frederick Douglass said, we got the crops, and we say, look, we ain't going to get these crops just for y'all. We're going to take some of it. That's called situation ethics. Yeah, we do all the work and we're going to turn it over to you. The answer is no. And so one of the things I learned in the community that we need to get back to is honoring our elders. Because our young folks need to learn some things and not spend as much time as we do on social media. And so we can recapture the lostness of our genuine history, and that's part that has been stolen from us. And a people who know who they are cannot and will not be defined by others. And I believe, my brothers and sisters, that telling our story ourselves, our own story, we have a rich history that we don't have to worry about nobody else. In those Black Bottoms, The money turned over to our community 20 times because we had our own businesses. Some of these Black Bottom towns had airports and all kind of things, and we didn't beg folks to give us because my parents taught me in Black Bottom, if you believe in something, you can't just be on the radio talking about it. You just can't be on the radio or the TV debating about it. Yes, we'll have some differences, but we ought not to allow our differences to keep us from coming together. I believe that what we had before, we can have again. I believe again that we can disagree without being disagreeable on some points. What we had, we can have again. And what we were, we can be again. I believe that it's something within us that gives us that power. And my parents taught me that if you believe in something, then you give it your time, your talent, and your money. So we don't have to come out, number one, begging somebody else for stuff. We ought to do it ourselves. If you believe in something, give it your time. But give it your talent, your treasure. And here's an example. If you go for a grant, that's free money, and you don't have anything, now what the first thing they're going to do is say, well, now you want us to give you some money? You know, this is a dominant society, folks. They want to say, what do you have? Well, if you don't have the money, you can have what we call in-kind service. What does that mean? That means you got a talent. Somebody could might have a leadership talent. They may know how to do counseling. And I just say, well, that counselor, Brother George, is going to give us 25 hours a week. Now on his job, that would be worth X number of dollars. And I put that down. We don't have to pay him, but we got in-kind service. We got planning, finding out what that person made on his job or her job on planning. Somebody might have accounting skills, sustainability skills, or whatever it might be, building skills, all right, drug treatment skills, whatever they make, and you put that in that grant, and that's in-kind, because nobody going to give you something for nothing about a dream. And I just believe what we were, we can become again, my brothers and sisters. Now, as I look at the situation in the past, I see that I wrote this down, a tree that looks at the sky and lifts her leaves and arms to the sky. Yes, that's a tree. But there's got to be something higher than us. There's got to be something, whatever you want to call it, a higher power or whatever name you want to give. There's got to be something else, because we didn't create all this stuff that's here and hanging it in place. And a people, again, who truly know who they are, cannot and will not be defined by others. That was given to me by William McLean. No matter how beautiful a flower might be, this is Maxwell Ozzie, the rose, without roots, it has no potential for growth. We got to get back to that African religious philosophy that I am because we are. We are, therefore I am. And it takes a village to raise a child. See, in other words, we got to get away from that European concept of me, myself, and I. That African religious philosophy says, I am. Oh, yes. Because we are. Without the we, there wouldn't be an I. So I don't have to lose my I in the African religion philosophy, but that my I is not bigger than the community. I am because we are. And when I looked at that community, I saw black radio coming together. And what I found out that during that time when we were oppressed, well, we took that negative and make the positive out of it. I like to say we took a minus and made a plus out of it. We took things that folks put in our way to help us on our way. And so in black radio, my brothers and sisters, we had Come Together Day. They didn't care if you was Islamic or whatever. Spody was on drugs, one of the people in the community. And he went to jail. And we had all kinds. We had holiness. We had Baptists. We had every religion. But I never heard the elders in Black Bottom in Jacksonville, Florida, point their hand against Elijah Muhammad and anybody else. We need to stop that foolishness. We need to come together. Everybody can bring something to the table. Well, Spody came out. He had his bow tie on. He had his suit on. And he was singing a song called A White Man's Heaven is a Black Man's Hell. And that was a song I found out later that Louis Farrakhan put in place. All the elders in the people community knew was that Spody had gotten his life back together. And that was a beautiful thing. Now radio, that black radio, they did local news. And so those disc jockeys were able to disseminate messages on those black radio stations. Now, sometimes those radio stations was owned by white folks, but as long as money came in, they didn't care. But now we got all of these stations. I'm not knocking them down, but they're now national stations, and they're no longer local, so we don't get the local news. Anything went on, that black disc jockey would talk about it. When Dr. Martin Luther King in Atlanta, Georgia, had the SCLC, WERD was up under them. It was the first black-owned radio station in the country. And Dr. King would take a note down and go out the window, tie something, and they would get it. Okay. Then you had other disc jockeys that were very powerful during that time, and I'll call their name a little bit later. So my brothers and sisters, you work together. But when he told me don't lose my story, I started thinking about the Bethel Church. I began to think about in our community, Mother Dear, Auntie, Bones, and Johnny. We had 21 people in a two-story house near downtown, 14 kids, and the rest were adults. But they taught us something. We ate together. We fellowshiped together. And everybody came to our house because we were a community. We were in black bottom, supposed to be one step lower than the bottom. But I tell you, I found out my true history while I was there, my true culture, my sociology, and my philosophy that helped me to make it along the way. I got my burning in black bottom before I got my learning anywhere else. And boy, I tell you this, my brothers and sisters, we need to know. You had Spody, you had the boomerang game. That means we had, no, they would call it a club. But the Boomerang Gang helped us out when they had a riot in downtown Jacksonville in 1960 when the Klans decided to beat up the NAACP people, the young people's part of the NAACP. and the policemen had their Klan's outfit in the back of their car, and they start beating those kids. And they said that they tried to hide it. See, Black history, lost, stolen, and strayed. They said they had no video films of that, but yes, they did. They had it, but the New York Times got something, and they saw where they beat a young Black boy. His picture was on the New York Times. And now we've got the footage of that information, and it was there. I was a little boy. I didn't understand that my brothers was a part of the Boomerang Clan, and they went down there, and they fought for those young kids, of people who know what they are, and they fought back with the police and everything else and ran them out of downtown Jacksonville, down there in Hemings Park. I didn't know Hemings Park was named after a Klan's person, but now we continue to fight. That same park now is the James Weldon Johnson Park, who was there in Jacksonville, Florida, my brothers and sisters. Rutledge Pearson, a teacher in eighth grade, was a member of the NAACP, and he was with the youth department when we were in eighth grade. He walked in there with that history book with torn pages and stuff. He said, well, let's go through this a little bit. He went through it a little bit. He took it in the air and threw it on the ground and said, we're going to throw that book away, and I'm going to teach you your own Black history. And that helped me out, my brothers and sisters. Now I want to ask Brother George, Brother Marvin, and I want to ask Dr. Bridges, because I want us to have a community and not just me be the talker. All of us bring something to the table. I don't know everything. You don't know everything. So, brothers, if you had a concept of Black Bottom, wherever it was, whatever it was called, tell me your memories.
All right. Brothers and sisters, it's coming together day here at the NAAEA. We're coming together from city to city. I'm going to start with Richmond, Virginia. We had 2 Street, call it the Harlem of the South. Everybody came through on the Chitlin' Circuit and had to stop by Richmond. We had our own everything. We had our own economy. We had our own restaurants. We had our own businesses. We had our own banks and our own insurance companies. We had it all right there at 2 Street. Brother George.
Yes, sir. The Black Bottom in Philly was from 40th Street on back. It was the bottom of West Philly. What was down there, I can't tell you, because if you wasn't from the bottom, you didn't go there. And so I never really went there to tell you, but I'm pretty sure. Well, one thing I can tell you is, it wasn't far from what they call University City, where all the universities in Philadelphia were. University of Penn, Drexel. It wasn't Temple was in North Philly. But as far as like the Black Bottom, I really don't know. I don't know what was down there because I didn't go down there.
All right, thank you, Brother George. And now we'll bring you Dr. Bruce. Dr. Bruce, are you with us?
Yes, sir, my brother.
Welcome.
First of all, I want to commend Dr. Lafayette Maxwell for a tremendous presentation. And I also hope that the people I invited on today, some new people who you'll probably get to in the calls, I hope you do, they'll be with us every week because this is what we do on this program every week. So those people who are here listening for the first time, if you enjoyed it, tune in with us on every week. You'll get this kind of lecture that Dr. Maxwell did. And I'm going to be very brief because I took notes on what Dr. Maxwell was saying. One point I want to make from a historic perspective, and, of course, that's no casting no aspersion on Brother George at all. But he made a statement. He said he wasn't down there, and that's absolutely right. But now what we have to do as people of knowledge and people of learning is we don't have to be there, but we can study, we can learn, we can read, we go back and get information. People oftentimes use a statement that if you mention a song, for example, say or something that happened, they'll say, well, that's before my time. Well, just because something is before your time is no reason for you not to know about it, because of the fact if all you know is what goes on in your time, you're very limited in your knowledge. So I just wanted to say that point. So what we have to do, and I even wrote down some things, that I don't have time to go into now, but to mention that people might want to look up. First of all, people might want to research Howard Thurman, who may not be familiar with that name. Dr. Maxwell mentioned Howard Thurman, and he's going to come up in some upcoming lectures. Howard Thurman, and I'm saying it so people might be writing it down, and they also might want to look up the other black bottoms or other black communities in the United States. And just to briefly talk about Durham is what Dr. Maxwell and I said I'd talk about. Durham, of course, had the black community called Haiti. And Haiti, of course, was named after Haiti because people all over the country, black people all over the country, when Haiti became independent from the country of France in 1803 under the leadership of the great honorable Toussaint Louverture, then black people everywhere around the country and even some places in the world were feeling so good and so excited about the defeat of the Napoleonic army of France by this black nation in the Caribbean. So this is where the name Haiti came from Haiti. And so, but the Durham community in the black community in Durham called Haiti was self-sustaining. There were over 200 to 300 businesses, I believe. But like I said before, people can research it, go on the computer and look it up. There's no excuse nowadays for people not to know anything. Whether or not you were there, we definitely have to start using our research skills to find out what happened. Haiti was visited by Booker T. Washington in Durham, North Carolina, many years ago. And before he got to Durham to visit the black community, I think he was in Greensboro, according to the book E. Franklin Frazier, The Black Bourgeoisie. He said that he commended Greensboro and I think Winston-Salem and some other places about where he was going, about where he was. But they said, oh, Booker, I know you think Greensboro was something and you think Winston-Salem was something, but man, wait till you get to Durham, North Carolina, and see what those Negroes in Durham, North Carolina are doing. And so when he came here, he said out of all the communities that he had visited, Durham black community was the most progressive. And to end my point, Richmond, Virginia, Jackson Ward, that's the section in Winston, and in Richmond, I believe it's called Jackson Ward. And I threw that out because people might want to look it up. Jackson Ward, Duke Ellington, Louis Armstrong, Billie Holiday, James Brown, the Chitlin Circuit, all of them came to Jackson Ward to visit the theater, and Maggie Walker put her bank there in Jackson Ward in Richmond, Virginia. I'm through, Brother Marvin. Back to you.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. And I will turn it back over to Dr. Maxwell.
Yes, my brothers and sisters, on Friday night, they're talking about crab balls. We had it in Jacksonville, Florida. You had it in the garage. You had a big old pot. You had crabs. You had all kinds of meat, and the people came, and we just had fellowship. And one of the things that was so beautiful is when we had Come Together Day. And what we would do that Friday night, you would have some of the elders, and they would be sharing stuff from Benjamin Mays and Martin Luther King. We didn't know it at the time. I just want to share just a few things with you from there about life in Benjamin Mays. It must be borne in mind that the tragedy of life does not lie in not reaching your goal. The tragedy lies in not having a goal to reach. It's not a calamity to die with a dream unfulfilled, but it is a calamity. It's not a disaster not to be able to capture your idea, but it's a disaster not to have an idea to capture. It's not a disgrace not to reach the stars, but it is a disgrace not to have a star to try to reach. Failure is not the problem, but low aim. Whatever you do, they taught us, strive to do it so well that no person living and no person dead and no person yet to be born could do it any better than you. And whatever you touch, young people, your aim should always be that you leave what you touched better than when you found it. Dr. Martin Luther King, I remember some of the things they shared with us. Everybody can be great because anybody can serve. You don't have to have a college degree to serve. You don't have to have a subject and a verb agreement to serve. You don't have to know about Plato and Aristotle to serve. Don't even know about them anyhow. You don't need to know about Einstein's theory of relativity. You don't need to know that anyhow. And the second thermodynamics, you don't need all that. What you need, King said, is a heart that's full of grace and a soul generated by love. Love is the only force capable of transforming an enemy into a friend. Well, we got to be careful about hatred. Hatred can eat the individual up, okay? He said, finally, it is still one of the tragedies of human history that the children of darkness are frequently looked down when they're really the children of light. And I was a disc jockey, too. I didn't say that. But let me share something with you in black music. I'll do this later. Marvin Gaye. Oh, we played it. We didn't just have no gospel. The message is in the music. That was a sound of Philadelphia. Just let me do a quick roll. Sam and Dave. I'm a soul man. I found out from one of them is died. I forgot which one. He said it was a cold song. Coming to you on a dusty road. Good loving, I got a truckload. Don't worry because I'm coming. I'm a soul man. I got what I got the hard way. Mm-hmm. But I'm making my life better each and every day. So, honey, don't you fret, because you ain't seen nothing yet. I'm a soul man. Now, here was the key. You thought it was just something between a male and a woman, but you couldn't put those songs out there without having a cold message in the song. Here's the thing that he said. I was brought up on a side street. I learned how to love before I can eat. I was educated at Woodstock. Now, I thought they were talking about the Woodstock that they had, I think it was in New York somewhere, was the name of a high school. I was educated at Woodstock. Don't lose your story. Mm-hmm. Grab the rope, and we'll pull you in and give you hope. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There were messages in the movie. Billy Paul, let them in. Am I black enough for you? Isaac Hayes, Soulville. Curtis Mayfield, we'll win them. Keep on pushing. Those songs helped us out. Harry Melvin and the Blue Notes, wake up everybody. McFadden and Whitehead, ain't no stopping us now. That helped us along the way. Sly and the Family Stone, Stan, thank you. Sing a simple song, Hot Fun in the Summertime. Mahalia Jackson, Precious Lord. Louis Farrakhan, A White Man's Heaven is a Black Man's Hell. Oh, my brothers, they were cold songs and many more that we'll talk about at another time. As I conclude my piece, I was a disc jockey and I wrote a poem myself. And it was a love poem to a woman. I found sunshine when I found you. Let nobody love you the way I love you, for no one can love you like I love you. Even if they tried to, let it be known that I satisfied you. At home cooking dinner and strolling down the avenue. When my love comes down, I bring it right on home to you. Some men love a woman by the twinkle in her eye. Others love a woman by the way she walks on by. But I love you, mama, because you're mine, all mine. And I found sunshine when I found you. I used to cry, pooling tears running wild. But you came along, put a rainbow in my heart, and gave my romance a start. That's why right now I can honestly say, you are the sunshine of my everyday. You are the touch that means so much. Like the sun, you mean everything to me. Don't lose your story. You have a story to tell, and it's worth telling.
All right. All right, Dr. Maxwell. All right. Fire and ice.
Can I do this?
Fire and ice.
Can I do this?
Yes, sir.
Let me see if I can. Okay. Let me just do this since we're talking about it.
Hold
it, brother. Let me make sure. That's all right. I'm trying to get it. I must have put it on. I think I put it on mute. Let's see.
While we're waiting, 845-277-9250, getting ready for the call-ins. 845-277-9250. Slido.com, the number is 340-7396. Slido.com, S-L-I-D-O.com. We got some great information up in there, questions today. And again, if you want to call in and talk, make a comment,
Share a thought, 845-277-9250. It's African American Empowerment Sunday Live with Dr. Maxwell, Dr. Bruce, Dr. Brother George, and myself right here live on the air. You, again, have listened to, if you don't, go back and play it back, Dr. Maxwell laying it down as we create the development of an Afrocentric reality. Can't beat it. All right. Dr. Bruce, are you there?
Yes, sir, brother.
All right. Well, while we're waiting for Dr. Maxwell, just give us some of your impressions. Then we'll go to Brother George on what this lecture has meant to you today.
Oh, I don't have anything. I mean, he just about said it all. I mean, excellent lecture, excellent research, and more importantly, what I think people should get from it is his development, his upbringing, not so much the Duke University, the Shaw University, Apex School of Theology, not so much pastor at a church and that kind of thing, but more importantly, what formed his mind and formed him and made him become the person that he is, and to result in the kinds of analysis that we heard today. I think that's important. Very important. That's why I can't hardly wait to hear from our callers. And I think there could be no better day, Brother Marvin, than me to do what I did today, because some people I had never called before and had them to tune in, because I know they captured now. They'll be back now. They'll be looking for Dr. Maxwell back. So that's all. That's about it. No question.
We're recapturing African Man with Dr. Lafayette Maxwell. Dr. Maxwell, are you ready?
See if I can get it.
Okay.
Water before bed shrinks the swollen prostate overnight. Thousands of men are regaining control of it.
Right now.
Ladies, that's for you. We are proud as African-American men of the latest that's in our orbit, that's in our life. We cannot do it without you. Together, we can do it. I'm through.
All right. Dr. Maxwell, you had me singing that on the mute. Mm-hmm. Play that tonight when I get home. Oh, yes, I will. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to Slido first, real quick. There are two statements and one question. So we'll start out with how do we take back our minds from the oppressor, and how do we begin to create our own green lines? And then here's the question for you, Dr. Maxwell. How did you stay true to yourself at the PWIs?
The VWIs?
PWIs. At Duke and at University of Florida, how do you stay true to yourself?
Yeah, it was because of my roots. My father and I were very close, and he would walk me together down in the park and sing to me and show me what black folk. And I did not know that they say that Jacksonville was the Harlem of the South, but what I found out that Harlem got a lot of their stuff from Jacksonville. You know, Otis Reddings and all of these people came. They gave, that was my root. And so you couldn't take that away from me, mother dear and auntie. That's why I said we need to make sure that we respect our elders, because they have a history. They wasn't bitter, but they told us the truth, but they always encouraged me. And so when I got to the University of Florida, I had the black house. Had pictures of black art. Mm-hmm. Duke, the same thing. And they had this saying about me. They say, well, We accepted you in all these full scholarships, okay? They say you was a number 8 on the Rutgers scale. I know what they're talking about. That's the earthquake scale. So they knew I raised holy hell at Florida. I didn't just curse and stuff. We used our mind. We had women and men together when we would meet with the deans and stuff. So as students, we put that school on the map in so many ways and ended up leaving as the number 1 student in my graduation. But it was because I didn't lose my story.
All right. All right. All right. Let's go to the lines. We got a new number on the line. I'm going there first. 919, last four is 5717. 5717. You're live. You're up with Dr. Maxwell, Dr. Bruce, Brother George, and myself. Do you have a question or comment?
Good evening, brother. Can you hear me?
Yes. Welcome.
First of all, I want to thank Dr. Maxwell. This is Reverend Rogers. I'm calling out of Durham, North Carolina. I'd like to thank
Reverend
Dr.
Rogers.
Maxwell, who's an educator and a preacher and a teacher. I think that we would learn quite a lot from listening to Dr. Maxwell. One of the things I wanted to touch on, Dr. Maxwell, is this. I've never seen a time when African-Americans, particularly young African-Americans, were so anti-intellectual. There was something that stopping them from wanting to learn. I remember, and you remember as well, that school was very important. We're talking about those days, back in those days, when teachers were very important, and schools were very important, and we wanted to learn. We have raised up a generation of people who are anti-intellectual, and they don't want to learn. I remember back in the 90s when my daughter was graduating at A&T University in Greensboro. And one of the things that was going around at that time was, if you were black and you were speaking good English, if you were doing your homework, if you were participating in class, you were acting white. That's ridiculous. And some of our young people bought into that. And so now we got young people who are walking around who absolutely are just as dumb as they could possibly be. And not only that, they don't want to learn. And I've never seen that type of black person in America. And I think that's where we need to start, right there in the schools and educating our children at home and in schools. That's all I wanted to say. I thank you so very much for the program. Wonderful program. Thank you, Dr. Maxwell. You're a great teacher. I've never been around you, but I did not learn something from you. So thank you so very much. I'm going to sit back and listen.
All right. Thank you, sir. All right. Let's go over to 919-1572. 1572, you're on live with Dr. Bruce, Dr. Maxwell, Brother George, and myself. Do you have a question or comment? 1572 is dropped. Let's go to 5932. That's 919-5932. The last four, your number 5932. Welcome to the show. How are you? 5932, you have a question or comment?
Hello, can you hear me?
Hey, welcome to the show. Yes, welcome.
Okay, I really enjoyed the program today. And Dr. Maxwell topped it off with his poem, which I love to death. And I learned so much.
Thank you.
Okay, all right. That's all I got to
all
say
right,
today.
Thank you. Thank
all
you,
right,
man.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. All right, Dr. Maxwell, you're going to have to give me an autographed copy of that poem so I can take it home with me. And start reciting those lines to the bride. I'll keep a long time with those.
That's
lines.
It. I got a copy of it.
All right.
I'll get it to you.
All right. Let's go with the Slido real quick, Dr. Maxwell. The next question is, how do you go about getting our black bottoms back? How do we get our black bottoms back?
Well, I can only use myself as an example. I teach undergrads. And also in the divinity program, you got to meet them where they are. You got to give them voice and not going in as the superior person with all the knowledge. You got to listen to them and see where they are. And I called all my students scholars. And I didn't know it, but they said, you made me feel good. I said, why? They said, well, nobody has ever called me a scholar before. I said, you are. You didn't come here as an empty pitcher before a full fountain. With us, you may not know everything in my class, but you know something. And if I'm the teacher the whole semester and you're the student the whole semester, I have failed you and me. for there should be a time in the classroom where you, the teacher, and I'm the student.
Mm.
That's how you start giving them an opportunity to say, you are important. You don't have to be afraid to say something. And even if it's wrong, I tell them 666 cold remedy was made in Durham, North Carolina, and the scientist was trying to get that formula, and the 665th time he messed up. It was the 666th time that he got it, and he called it 666.
Wow.
So I say if a pharmacist can fail 665 times and never give up, then we cannot give up on our kids. We got to understand them. We got to listen to them because they've got something to say that would help them. They must have voice. And people learn differently. Some of them audible, some of them with pictures. I use music and all kinds of things. And when they leave, I give them a spoken word. It don't have to be a sermon, but something that's encouraging and a meditational song that will center them before my class. Meet them where they are. That'll help.
All right. I like that. You're listening live to African American Empowerment Saturday, 845-277-9250. If you want to get on the conversation, we got Dr. Lafayette Maxwell here giving us the development of the African-centric, Afrocentric theology. We're going to go back to the lines. We're going over to 919, area code, and the last four is 9934. 9934, you're live. You're up. If you have a question, a comment, a statement for Dr. Maxwell.
Good afternoon. My name is Reverend Dr. My name is Reverend Dr. Joseph Cohen. I'm calling from Apex, North Carolina. I don't have a question. I don't have a question, but I'm one of those people who are fortunate enough to have Dr. Maxwell as a spiritual father, mentor, and big brother. I'm one of those people that have had the opportunity to sit at the feet of the sensei, as I like to call him, and get this lecture that he's given today firsthand, riding around in a car, driving down I-95 to get this firsthand. So I just want to make a comment in thanking our Father Jehovah that he continues to keep our brother healthy, safe, and strong mind, full of vigor and passion to continue to tell his story, our story, and more importantly, God's story. So I just had to be here to just listen and see my brother continue to stay committed to spreading God's kingdom work about the greatest people that have ever been created and known to man. That's all I have.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. Dr. Maxwell. Well, respect it. I like it. All right, let's go back to the lines. 252, verse 3, 5886, 5886, 252, 5886. You're next. You're live. If you have a question, comment, or statement for Dr. Maxwell, welcome to the show.
How you doing? First of all, I want to say thank you. My name is Carnell Wallace. I'm from the New Bern, North Carolina area. I got invited to the show, and I'm super glad that I was able to get that moment to be able to tune in and listen to the whole show, because a lot of the stuff that a lot of y'all are putting out there and trying to put out there for the younger generation. I mean, I ain't the youngest. I'm 34, just turned 34 in January, but the way that y'all talk about the different things that y'all do is something that definitely inspires people, even if it's just on this station, on this podcast. And I mean that in a way of I've always myself been trying to figure out a way of how I can make an impact on how I can try to do things myself. And honestly, I feel like I've just been given one of the best opportunities when it came to meeting Mr. Mm-hmm. Reggie. Here in town, he's put me in front of like some people and some opportunities that has really, I guess you could say, just grew the ego of really having the skills and having opportunities to go out and make a real impact on my own community. Always had some type of feel that
that made me, like, I guess you can say, feel as if I'm supposed to be home. The talents and stuff that I do work with really isn't the most idle thing in my hometown as far as my digital marketing thing. But I've, by God, I've really just been able to make things happen. And it's always something that keeps just making me just keep digging in and staying here in town. And one of the biggest ones was me having my little girl. I'm a single father holding it down full time. And the want to have my daughter around the family and to know where her roots and stuff came from is one of the things that has made me want to drive so much harder to be able to really make a real impact. Not only just to make her proud, not only to achieve something, just to have that idea that me as just the little guy that grew up in New Bern really having a real impact on so many people. And I don't look for – it's crazy because I'm super humble. I do a lot of different things with the community. I love hearing about the knowledge and stuff that be going on. I just found out even just recently right there across from Gang City, right across the bridge in New Bern, it was a black man that actually bought the whole – all the script malls and all the different land that was right over here just to open up nothing but job opportunities and wow. Different experiences that – a lot of black people probably didn't even really lock in and think like, oh, yo, that's something that I can be doing. And I feel like a lot of that knowledge and a lot of that history, like y'all was talking about, even like my man was talking about how he driving, listening, tuning in. I'm in the car right now, driving, trying to get fish and stuff for the family and stuff. It really impacted me that I tuned in and I will continue to tune in. But being able to get that knowledge, like how y'all said, we can't let that knowledge slip away because it is from young people out here that really want to know that knowledge. I talk to my fellas about this junk a lot. And a lot of the fellas that I hang around, they aren't the ones that people look at and be like, oh, yeah, he ain't paying attention. He ain't really looking at this. He ain't really missed this event that went on. A lot of them be mad because they ain't even see something or they ain't get that opportunity to really see it. Like, I wish it was a chance to be able to same knowledge y'all talking about Durham and stuff. I did learn about some of it because I went to ECU, graduated ECU, played football out there my time. It wasn't even something that I glorified by. I got 6 rings. I wear 1 ring. That was just because of the impact that I made that year with the brothers that I met. And that knowledge that I actually felt even that year about Durham, I learned that same year. It's the same ring that I wear, the same time that I learned about the black culture and the black history of what really was going on. I ain't talking about just what's inside of the book, because that's what a lot of us, the younger folks, is stuck at too, that why they don't take on that knowledge, right? Because they tired of seeing what is put in the books that the people that conquered this town or conquered this nation put out there. Because whoever conquers whatever, that's the knowledge that they want to spread. There's so much more that's undercover, and people will feel more powerful if they knew where they came from. And I'm getting an opportunity with this HOPE program that Mr. Reggie is giving me a chance to help push. I'm getting an opportunity to be able to connect a lot of that level, I feel like, especially with these educational summits, these financial summits, different things that we're working with, the community college. We just met with the mayor on Thursday. He sounds like he's loving the ideas, trying to see if we can get different sponsorships. Man, I'm doing everything that I can. And truly, it's not even the profit. To say, oh, I made money from this. It's really to make an impact. I don't look for no profit when I'm doing the skills that I can share and give. The education is one of the last thing. The education is one of the main things that's on that HOPE acronym that I love. And it is big to me because I really got a lot of my education not from my community. I did get it from the community as far as enough to move forward and to try to drive forward. But a lot of my information that I did learn really came from people that I really just happened to fall into and work with. I've been in sales and all of that stuff for a minute. So I've been able to run into a lot of black people that's really successful and that really has been able to do some things. And I promise you, if more black people here in town, more biracial people, it ain't even just the black, whoever just underprivileged, if those people was able to have those resources like the Hope Center, the Stanley White that we were all working on as far as in town, those different centerpieces that Hope is putting together, I feel like that's going to be something big, and it's going to be very impactful to the knowledge and education that we really need to keep pushing. And thanks to you, again, thanks everybody that's doing this, because we need it. I just really want to say that we really need it, because I can't give up on this. Please don't give up on this, because we want it. We just don't know how to really receive it and do something with it. I'm done.
Thank you. Thank you, brother. We appreciate that. Thank you. Keep listening. And shout out to Brother Reg down in New Bern. We're coming to have a come together day in New Bern, so be looking out for that. Again, shout out to Brother Reg down in New Bern. We're coming to City to City. The Empowerment Network is forming, and we're going to keep on working together. All right, Dr. Maxwell, got about 3 minutes, maybe 4 minutes left. Let's hear from you, and then Dr. Bruce, Brother George, and we'll wrap it up for today. We got you coming back on the fourth Saturday every month, so if you missed them, you'll get them again on the fourth Saturday in April. Dr. Maxwell.
Yes, thank you, Brother Marvin, for allowing me this opportunity, Joy, Bridges, and the audience. Just want to say two quick things. You talk about a woman's fear as though it has a limit. There's nothing in this earth without a woman in it. There's not a single thing on earth without a woman to begin it. We are a winner. That's it, Brother Mark.
Moving on up. All right, Dr. Maxwell, thank you. Dr. Bruce, final comments.
Yes, sir. Really enjoyed the program. And I want to thank Dr. Maxwell again for becoming part of the NAAE family and for being such a great, great scholar and a great brother just in general. And we'll be looking forward to hearing him again the fourth Saturday in this month. So please tell other people about the program, spread the word. And I just like to say, in the words of Brother Curtis Mayfield, too many have died in protecting my pride for me to go second class. We've survived the hard blows, and we want you to know that you'll face us at last. And I know you will give consideration, shall we perish unjust or live equal as a nation. Curtis Mayfield.
Thank you, Dr. Bruce. Brother George, closing comments.
Yes, sir. I'd like to thank Dr. Maxwell for a great lecture. He really got into the guts of our people. You know, he was talking like very mundane stuff that any of our people can relate to. And I thank Dr. Bridges for putting that challenge before me to find out about the black bottom in Philly, which I got people that live down there and everything. So I'm going to find that out. I'm going to find out about black bottom in Philly. And the next time I will. But thank you, Bruce, for doing that. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Bruce and Dr. Maxwell. We'll have Dr. Bruce live next week. If we didn't get to you, forgive us, right? It's a lot that goes on with these live shows. But, again, listen to the African American Empowerment. Plug in. We got a whole host of archive shows that you can listen to as well. But just remember this before we go. There is work that needs to be done, and we're going to have to do it because that impossible dream can be made true if we're willing to live it together. Until next week, brothers and sisters, stay well. Stay peaceful.
your dream, the impossible dream, to fight the unbeatable foe, to bear with unbearable sorrow, to run
away
where the brave dare not go, to ride the unrightable wrong, to love pure and chaste from afar, to try when your arms are too weary, to reach the unreachable star. This is my quest.
My quest.
Without question or pause, to be willing to march into hell for a heavenly cause. And I know if I'll only be true to this glorious quest, that my heart will lie peace and calm when I'm laid to my rest.
Peace and quietness you're sure to find,
and the world will be better for this. That one man scorned and covered with God still strove